Okay, this is board time on Wednesday, February 4th at 1:34 p.m.
Okay, welcome, welcome. We've got a very simple agenda. Councillor Mielke is not here. I understand he's in Olympia today. So we'll just jump right in here. We have the board minutes from January 28th. And
I understand those were amended, and I have the amended copy here.
Yes, you have the amended copy?
Pardon me? I do have the revised.
Yes.
And yes, this is the accurate.
Okay. So you know what was revised?
Yes, I know what was revised.
Any discussion in regard to it?
Nope.
Okay,
I move for approval.
Okay, I second that. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Okay. Motion passes. The January 28, 2015 board time minutes are approved. Thank you very much. Oh, you can sign those when you get a chance here. Legislative call 1.2. Axel, are you want to lead on that one?
Yeah. Yeah, we don't have a call set up. I talked to Mike, and one of our primary bills, you'll remember, is the Conservation Futures Bill. This is the bill that would allow, so we get money in for Conservation Futures, which is really being able to go out and buy pieces of property that make sense to preserve. We've done that. It's been around for quite a long time. It's something that's out of Senator Benton's shop in DES, and Pat Lee manages it. One of the concerns we always had with that was, as we accrue properties, the law only allows you to use, I think, currently 15% of the total fund for maintenance.
And this bumps that up to...
So that bill's being heard right now at 1:30, so Mike's in that hearing, okay. Signed in. And
we supported that bill.
A couple other updates, and maybe...
Yes, we did.
Councillor Stewart can jump in here. There's LSC tomorrow. There's also a hearing at 3:30 on a bill that the council was interested in a couple weeks ago, and that was one of the three bills that had to do with, it was Senator Cleveland's bill. One of them was for the bi-state working group on the big transportation project, and that bill is being heard tomorrow at 3:30.
And tomorrow. We weighed in on that one, too.
Yeah, when I spoke to Mike, he kind of asked, he said that you guys were going to try to connect today, I think,
yes.
And he was wondering if you were coming up tomorrow.
Was that the one where we voted to oppose that bill?
Yeah, I think there was three of them.
Well,
is that correct?
I don't think we voted to not approve all three. The one we voted...
To oppose,
strongly oppose, was the one that increased all of the kinds of taxes for high-capacity transit and amending 81-104 and doing a vast array of other things. We agreed that that one would be opposed. Mm-hmm. I want to read the version of Cleveland's bill, and it's to create a bi-state. We already have a bi-state, so I'm not really sure why she's saying we need to create something. Bi-state has been inactive. That's one of my assignments, that mm-hmm. if it rejuvenates itself, that I would be on there.
Okay.
And so I need more information about that bill,
okay.
And if it's been amended and so on and okay. so forth.
Anna, in my the RTC meeting, we had a blue single paper last night mm-hmm. that was in my packet. It's in my office for that was the bills regarding the RTC. If you can grab that,
sure.
I'd be able to bring them in. The reason I bring that up is because those bills, I would think that we would support those and direct Mike Burgess to support them for the candidate.
I looked at that, and I'm trying to recall what they were asking to do.
One was that only Washington organizations
oh, yes.
and members would vote on Washington projects and what would vote
at
on
RTC.
Because Washington RTC is a Washington
yes.
organization.
And that had a hearing last week, and Mike did sign in and testify.
In support.
Yep.
So he already knows we support that?
We supported that one
okay.
at the beginning
okay.
through
Good.
All venues.
Okay. And the second one was, were you finished?
Yes.
Okay. The second one was the ability for our local legislators from one, I think one from each district to participate, be able to have voting rights on there as representatives of the RTC. Mm-hmm. Did you pick up on it last night where Matt Ransom, who was testifying against the citizens on that at citizen expense? I think, what's
where
wrong with
he
this picture?
Was saying that they shouldn't be voting members?
He was basically opposing both of those bills, mm-hmm. on using taxpayer funds to lobby against the taxpayers.
Well, and I'm not sure what authority, because RTC, do we vote to just let him do that? I don't think we did.
He was
just presenting it for information.
He also, I believe, said that he was up there testifying against it.
I could not figure out if he was testifying against those or if he was talking about other testimony. And maybe I just didn't pick up on...
I came that close to calling him on that because a public bureaucrat employed by the citizens, who's supposed to be working for the citizens, there's just something in my eyes very wrong about them using the public citizens' money to lobby against the public citizens. Is just bad government. And I didn't bring it to a vote because the citizens have a minority position on that board.
I know.
The other team that sees citizens as piggy banks and obstacles to overcome to fund their projects dominate that board.
I think your point is very well taken. And I think what we can do is say that over and above the lobbying agenda that we approved, that's the Transportation Alliance, which is all in very general terms, and we did approve that as part of RTC, over and above that, anything else he's going to support or
blue. Couldn't find a blue paper.
Oh.
RTC?
That's not blue. What's that? That's not it.
I think it was blue.
Yeah, it was.
I'll look in my stack.
Yeah.
So I think it's improper for him as executive director to advocate for or to advocate against anything that the board has not seen, reviewed, and taken a board vote on.
I agree.
So we can go back with that policy request.
Yes, I agree.
I'll be happy to initiate that.
Okay, very good. Anything else you've been tuned in with the bills?
What was the third?
The one from last night?
Yeah. One was to...
If I can step out of that.
I could. You're more important than I am.
Does this have anything to do with any of the bills you're discussing?
Mm.
I think I know where
that.
Do you? Okay, thanks. I think I might have put it in my briefcase looking for some homework to do.
These are some that Burgess is working on. I'm not even sure what that first one is.
Okay.
Oh, they're good. Thank you. One, two, three.
I'm unclear about what this really means. The first one, and then the other two that we're talking about are...
Would restrict allocation of state funds for RTPO planning purposes to any RTPO that also receives federal funds in the same biennium. Directly affects organization, reduces the state grant. I don't know about anything about that either.
So...
What's the number on
it? SB 5196.
And that was the first I'd heard of that, and if there was any interest at all, and... He didn't really discuss these in any kind of serious depth.
Yep. So the ones that I think we are supporting is SB 5199. It says, would we revise statute to remove non-Washington board members as full voting members of RTPO policy boards? Why would Oregon vote against the citizens in Clark County.
And he was advocating against that.
Yes. SB 5200 would add senior legislator from each RTPO legislative district as full voting members of the RTPO policy board. So their members right now are legislators, but they can't vote.
Right.
And this would allow their representatives to have a voice on there and hopefully balance out the non-elected members in there that aren't there for the citizens, they're there for their agencies.
So that's a dual-edged sword. Right now, we could get some support at RTC from some sensible people, but nothing's forever. So
noise as good as their representatives.
Exactly right.
Whose team are they playing on?
Yeah.
Okay, so Axel, can you verify that those two, SB 5199 and SB 5200, or should I say, in your recollection, did we already voice support of those?
We have supported one in a hearing. I don't think the one with the legislators having a vote has had a hearing yet, but we are supporting that bill.
Okay, so we're on record, and Mike Burgess knows to lobby for those bills.
Yes, the one I have to research is the 5196. So I'll look.
51.
Is that right?
Yeah, 5196 is the one we don't know about.
Yeah, that's
the one. Okay, so we don't need to change course or add anything to it.
Not with those two, no.
Okay, very good. Anna, can you make sure we each have a copy?
Absolutely.
Thank you. Okay. Any more? Anything you want to share on 1.2? Anything more? That's a legislative call.
For WASAC, I'm going through. Yesterday, I received the list of what they're lobbying for considering as high priority. Some of them I've seen on lists before, but I need to research those, see if they're ones I've looked at before. It came in yesterday at sometime in the afternoon, and I haven't had time to go through it.
Why am I not surprised? You're as busy as I am.
It has a hot slip on it, which means highest priority, because he also has a call in to me. Saying that he and I need to talk about some stuff. So.
Okay.
And that's regarding WASAC.
In other words, that's a little homework for us to do.
And any that I see that are high priority that I'm unsure about the impact, I'll be checking with you if that's okay with you. And then based on getting more information, I'll be coming back to you to see if we agree on what the priority. I know you've indicated you're comfortable with my judgment, but
I am.
On stuff that is on the hot stack, it just wouldn't hurt to have a second set of eyes.
Yes, and I appreciate that. I understand also that the legislative process is moving along, and we don't want to miss an opportunity.
Exactly.
So I want to go on record to make sure that it's open and out there that on anything that you consider timely, that I defer to your judgment. You can speak in my stead when it comes to making, directing our lobbyists to support or oppose those projects, because the thing that unites us is that we know what team we're playing for. We play on the citizens' team, and that's aligned us in just about every area so far. So you have...
All right.
You speak for me in that area.
Good to know.
Okay. Anything else?
No.
Okay. Okay. Commissioner reports.
I'd have to stop and collect my thoughts to know what I'd report on, so I'm out of luck right now.
You mean you're out of time right now?
Exactly.
Like me, it's amazing that I have what my wife calls my brain pad, which is a good way to, it's a just wonderful organized list. And not only am I not pulling stuff out of there, they check up to get her done, but it's actually stacking up to put stuff in there. And it's been very busy. But we are getting stuff done. It's just that you can only get so much bandwidth done at a time.
We are.
I use it.
And
brain pad.
I just want to say, as an executive session, we've discussed that.
So one of the things, this isn't a commissioner report, but it's just a reminder that where we left off last night with Richfield's request,
yes,
we're going to be working on that to get a logical process going, mm-hmm. get logical information distributed to appropriate people. Mm-hmm. I think commissioners are going to want to read whatever additional staff reports are going to be made available to us so that we have sort of the succinct staff from both legal and from planning telling us again what their assessment is and why and what the laws are and so on and so forth. Mm-hmm. And so from there, we're going to kind of know how to put that together as we logically go forward.
And I agree. Mm-hmm. Yet so far, we haven't sat down with any of their Richfield stakeholders, any of the representation, not Jamie Housley, not the property owner, not the city council or anybody from them. And we've heard only one side. We've heard from our prosecuting attorney here. We've heard from staff here. Mm-hmm. And we need to hear from them. And so I would think that, I think we made it clear last night, mm-hmm. we're looking to them to provide leadership and to present to us what we haven't been exposed to. Their compelling stories. Present to us their arguments that would help us to know both sides of this issue. And I would think also it would be good for us, for those documents that they can provide that would clearly lay out point by point by point why they believe it's legally defensible for them to do this, mm-hmm. and then have our prosecuting attorney respond to that, and we would all see that, and they would let them respond to that as well.
I agree, but I also want to say from the time they submitted that application for expanding their urban growth boundary, Jamie Housley, the mayor, the city manager of Richfield, they have had a lot of time to submit their case in writing saying, so you got our letter of request. Here is why we think this is advisable and needed, and here's the law, and here's why we think this could fall within the law. So I want to make it, I want to state the case that they could have, we need to have the information from them, but they also could have given us that information any time along the line since the day they submitted their request. And I don't feel in any way that our staff has been remiss or barged ahead, you know, offering us their view of it. I want to push back with some responsibility for Richfield.
Yes, you know? I agree.
So they came last night. They were just a little bit indignant. And I'm just saying.
Well, that that's
request.
A good point, and I think we sent them that message last night.
I agree, you're exactly right. We need to not find ourselves in a vacuum, mm-hmm. where we're just kind of going by rote, and that if there is legitimate reason, and if it is legally defensible, and mm-hmm. if it does not violate GMA. And all those same things to the point where we're going to have to be defending ourselves, charging our taxpayers to defend for a decision made in Richfield. So I just want to get that in.
I agree. The message that we sent them last night is that's their project. They are the leaders. They need to champion it. and don't look to us to champion their project. We will be as cooperative and as open-minded and as engaging as we can be, but it's their vision. And if this time over the next several weeks goes by and we don't hear and they don't take up the lead, provide the leadership in this, then the opportunity will have been lost by default on their side.
And you know, I don't want them to call me and urge me. I want documents.
Yes.
Because that's what we're going to have to rely on to defend ourselves if GMA is challenged on that.
Yes, and there's really several parts to this. One, if certainly we value and want to consider the opinion of our own prosecuting attorney's office, yet the prosecuting attorney's office is advisory to us, and they play a very important role of keeping us out of trouble and defending us so we don't end up with a lawsuit that we'll lose. But I also am aware that their opinion is not law. Their opinion is their opinion to advise us, and it's to the measure of risk that we take to agree or disagree with that opinion. But the ultimate decision is ours, and the discretion is ours. I hope that, and so I plan to spend more one-on-one conversations with them and with Chris Cook to make sure that I've heard Chris Cook's response and their response and all the compelling reasons so that when we choose, it'll be with confidence. If it gets to the point where it looks like, you know, they do have a case, this does look like it's going to be legally defensible, then I would expect that the next step would be to have the other cities weigh in on this, because they would be contributing to the city-sponsored category.
Well,
alternative
and,
three.
And, you know, we have the trickiest role in GMA because we get all the information from the individual cities and we build our plan based on what we're doing in the unincorporated and then the information the cities have given us. Mm-hmm. And it's, you know, as we talked about last night, very time-consuming. So if, for example, Ridgefield wants to add 102 acres, I mean, if they came to me and said 5 acres for residential, I'd really maybe see if we could tweak some, but 102 acres is a big deal. And so if other commissioners, councillors, talk to them, really, I'll talk to Jamie any day. I'll talk to the mayor any day. I'll talk to Steve Stewart any day. But when it comes to my decision package, I want whatever they have to say in writing, stating their case.
Mm-hmm. I agree. Anybody else? Peter, you have anything to contribute to that? Axel? Mark?
All I have to say is, this is Ridgefield. We've got all this rural zoning. They're adamant that they need 102 acres for residential. They have to have the ag piece.
Yeah.
Why?
Well, that's a
good
question.
If it's so important, carve out 102 acres there or here or there. That's why it's, principally in my mind, that's why it's doomed.
And it may very well be, but that's a question that we need to really get and compelling answer.
Man, you want $5. So I put $5 on the table, and you say, no, you want the $5 that's in my pocket. But there's $5.
However, I want to make sure that we listen and we hear their side. So I'm not going to predetermine which way we're going to go on this.
Yep.
I just want to make sure that whatever we do, we've really heard their compelling reasons, and we don't make a one-sided information that's based on only one side.
One last thing. When that fellow came up and said, if you can't farm that land, then you need to get a book and study on how to farm, But I was looking up crops that grow in arid climates, mm-hmm. and beans, peas, all kinds of stuff. That is commercially viable property for farming.
And we could discuss
we
that
We could probably
further.
Debate that all day long, depending on what kind of revenue it produces and so on.
Yeah.
But I think I heard the answer to it last night. So I'm just going to be keeping the radar going on what that means, because if there's some ulterior thing, we're not going to buy it.
Yeah.
I mean, I need the straight story. I need exactly the straight story of how that land is going to be used.
I agree, too. When it comes to farming, if you want to stake your livelihood on the weather, you can say, yeah, it's commercially viable for you. I'm going to make the decision that you must farm. And we're kind of doing that if we force them to keep that, because you can't just discontinue farming without paying all of the 7 years back taxes and penalties and interest within 30 days, which holds a huge stick over the senior citizens that's all they got and they can't get out. And especially if they don't have sufficient water rights to be able to actually make it, that they can have a livable income from it. Yeah, you can farm it if you want to work as a slave, but if you're going to make your livelihood on that farm and you're depending on getting the rain when you need it and you don't have water to ensure that you're not going to lose the crop on some years, it's risk. Anyway, I hear both sides of that, but we got homework to do. Let's move on. Okay. Anything else? Commission reports?
No.
Okay. All right. Neither do I. Staff reports. Axel, you got 3.1, 3.2.
Yeah, and you'll recall from last week, these were both kind of, you're all three, I think, in the know and involved to some degree with Commissioner. These were Commissioner Mielke's questions from last week, and so I don't know how far I want to go into them without him here, but I am ready to update the council on both those things. So just briefly on the Veterans Garden, the direction that you gave clearly to staff last week was to get busy working with Judge Zimmerman on helping him to the staff's greatest ability. And what I did was meet with Heath and Marty. I met with Heath because the direction there was to get somebody liaisoned with him for parks so that he's comfortable with what to do with the park property, what he can do, and there's a link there with county staff. The other piece was connect Jim Muir, our building official, with him so that he's comfortable coming in and figuring out what exactly we need for a permit application, specifically as it relates to the design and engineering of the gazebo. So that's been done. I saw an email. I was CC'd on the email from Jim, kind of laying it out to Judge C. Hey, let's get together. Let's work this out. I think Peter and I can team up and craft the resolution that purchasing feels is needed, because they wanted a resolution from you saying this is okay to do on county property, and Bill Bjerke or someone else from Parks will be our intended liaison.
Okay.
For the
and
market.
I assume that resolution will also include a staff report that will confirm to us they're ready and the specifications are sufficient.
Yes, depending on the timing of when you all want it. I mean, if you wanted it next week, that probably wouldn't be ready. It would just be the resolution saying we like the project. If you want to
they
wait
go
until
together.
Something's
they
submitted.
Go together.
Okay.
Well, the staff needs to tell us they have what they need to move forward, okay. And that we should take it the form of a staff report that says so.
Well, then we'll wait for design and permit applications, and then we'll put the resolution together with those included.
Okay, yeah, and the idea for that request is not to hold it up. It's to inspire them to know how to move it along.
Okay. We can either talk about this next week, or I can get with Commissioner Mielke one-on-one and let him know. The Hazeldale property, he's been very interested in that. That's the one, it's a chunk of property up just south of the Leduc Farm.
This is the one that we got the letter to.
I think I did include the. We had done an analysis last year or a while back, where we actually thought about buying the Leduc Farm. It's the chunk of property just north of the parcel that we own already. The reason we looked at that was because the parcel we have, I think it's about an acre.
Isn't quite enough.
It's not quite an acre, but it's not big enough for what we anticipate will be required by the permitting agencies when we widen that road for stormwater. And so we decided at the time not to buy it. It just didn't make sense with how far out the widening of Hazeldale project is. That being said, staff went back through and they gave you the document with their recommendation where they say, yeah, the project is out a ways. We're not sure when we're going to widen Hazeldale Road, but we know when development occurs, we are going to widen it. And when we do that, it's definitely going to trigger stormwater management of some kind. And under the new permit, it's probably going to require not only what we have in that parcel, but more. So their recommendation is to hang on to it, not to surplus it, because what they say pretty clearly in here is that obtaining stormwater approvals are the most difficult element of most roadway projects, and so securing those properties, especially if they're already built out or have homes on them, stuff can be costly and expensive. So because this is vacant and we already own it, their recommendation is to stick it out, stick with it, and hang on to it. But obviously that's up to the board.
Yeah. The farm to the north is actually significantly larger than this parcel, right?
Not too much. I think it's 0.7 acres, and ours is maybe right in that ballpark. They're about the same size parcel.
Okay.
Yeah. All right. And now Commissioner Mielke also asked about a vacant parcel that's just on the other side of the street, mm-hmm. and what was being done with that. I did look into that. It's owned by the Faith Baptist Church, but I don't know what their kind of long-term intention is. It looks like it may be a ball field now or something like that, but there is a vacant parcel across the street to the north, but it's owned by the church.
Okay, so the one decision before us on this is, do we just simply hang on to that piece of property that we already own? I've read through the letter, and it seems to me the only sensible thing to do. Timing is certainly a factor, but one of the most foolish things we can do is not plan for and provide for the future. And this future does at some point include the improvements on Hazeldale Avenue. So I agree. Do we need any action on this today?
I don't think so. And I can get with Commissioner Mielke if he wants to bring it back. We can talk about it next week with, kind of with the context of the latest staff report. It's a tough call. I mean, it's not a near-term project, but we have the property and we know it's going to happen, so it's kind of tough.
Commissioner Stewart?
Yeah, so if we had to, if we sold this now and then in 5 years, which I don't think it'd be an unreasonable time frame, we'd go back out to widen Hazeldale Avenue. We would have to purchase land.
Likely developed with a house on it at a much higher price.
Yes.
Plus inflation.
Well, and the complication of if you purchase a single house, then nobody wants to live next to the retention pond. So, we get exponentially more complicated. It seems like, as Mr. Medora indicated, a smart defensive position to be keeping that parcel for now until we move the time frame out a little bit. Because we couldn't get it back. So.
I agree. So, Mr. County Manager, who's going to create this brand new inventory list of all the county-owned properties out there,
right,
and attach documents that are related to this letter?
That part isn't happening in phase one, the document piece.
Okay.
That's an incredibly mind-boggling project.
Well, it can be.
We can work on. Because a lot of these documents aren't in systems where we can just automatically, magically link
however,
things.
However, the process of putting a provision, just simply say, turn on the placeholder in GIS. Now you have a place so that we don't have to continually lose opportunities. If as long as you just say, I know that the whole database has not been updated, but we have a field where you can put this document and we make, bink, one progress, one document is attached.
Agreed. Going forward, that's a no-brainer, super simple.
In other words, you're already on this? You're going to attach this to that document, to that parcel?
When you get to the point that you create that, you'll have this done.
When the database is complete, and we've got all the fields, the descriptive fields in it, I will tackle that, yes.
I'm just thinking you just add one field to whatever else you're going to do.
But you can't put a document in a field. You have to link to something.
Right.
So, yes, it's possible.
Right. And so we this document already lives somewhere. So we would put GIA. In fact, okay, there's two things. One is that you would put assign a folder somewhere, and it would be for the documents linked to that field. That's one thing, pretty straightforward. And the other thing is add a field to GIS that links to that and put it in there, and voila.
Okay, let's move on.
Well, and then the one thing
you
I
increment
would add
you
to that, and this document, I've read through it, it's probably okay, but we'd have to work with real properties and maybe the attorneys a little bit, because what you don't want to do is create. You want to be open and transparent. You don't want to create a situation where it's so convenient for people to speculate. You know, cause, and I'm not saying that there's somebody out there, but somebody, hey, there's this cool database of 1,200 county parcels, and you put that document there, it makes it pretty easy to be like, well, maybe owning the one next door, according to what the county's written here, you know, would be worthwhile down the road. And I know we can't control everything like that, but I don't know if there's a fine line between counties and cities and often have executive sessions around real estate negotiations and where we go from here and what we need to buy or purchase, because you don't want to create that kind of speculation. So there's kind of a little bit of a line there.
There's no doubt that as soon as we start inventorying and being transparent, whether it's parks, which we're not inventorying for the purposes of sale, but there will be people who go in there.
Yeah.
And will be very interested in buying, selling, trading, and so on. I mean, it's human nature. Oh, it's public property. I'd love to get my hands on this piece, whatever. So that doesn't mean that we shouldn't know where those parcels are and what size they are and what we use them for. But it will, I mean, that's an age-old issue, is any surplus stuff. And in my years at the city, there were people who, some of the most concocted deals, which is where you're going to have a zone change here and you're going to develop residential, and then over here, you're going to buy the park's land and then you're going to give them a different parcel somewhere else, so which just happens to be on the other side of your housing development, which kind of looks like on this private park type thing. I mean, you can see it all.
Well, one partial or one step in that direction that maybe doesn't just simply say this whole document gets in there. It really has to do with just simply adding, at minimum, a note to that parcel that would say, "This is the intended future is for a stormwater facility for the expanded improvements on Hazeldale."
Yeah, why we have
just a note.
Every in this database, there's a link on the left side to the Property Information Center.
Great.
And then in the Property Information Center, there's a document section.
Good.
And there's already a ton of documents in there.
Great.
We could add a document. No trouble. Wonderful.
Thank you. That's a yes answer. I heard that.
Already right on top of it.
Well, I am the iPad king.
That's right.
As reported by this gentleman right here.
That's right. Facebook.
I thought you were. Oh, is that what you said on Facebook? Oh, okay.
Okay. So I assume... we have consensus that we just simply let this property live out its future as intended. That's a nod. Okay.
Agreed.
So
yes.
We there's consensus that we agree that the Hazeldell property will hang on to it with the intention of improving Hazeldell Avenue.
On that parcel on this database.
Okay.
So we don't have to revisit that one.
There is one something that I just as a follow up from our January 28 meeting. We had discussion about board assignments, and we actually did more than discussion. We actually divvied them up and made our selections in that document. We're waiting for that to show up in its polished form, and that document's really important. So I assume that we'll bring that back next, or at least we'll, as soon as it's ready, you won't bring it back. You'll just simply provide us a copy with that, Mark.
Yes.
And then our individual web pages for each of the counselors will reflect those new board assignments.
Okay.
Right? Great.
Okay. You want that?
I do. I think it's
important. And I'm anxious to see that, to see what burdensome disproportionate share.
I forgot the count, but it was like 17, 18, 22 or something.
17, 21, I believe.
Called Hammer the New Person.
The new counselor. Yeah,
that's right.
Well, first of all, thank you.
I didn't know how to escape the final.
Thank you very much for signing up for as much homework as you do. Some of these are difficult and some of them are simple. And you've taken some of the more difficult ones. I've got my probably most difficult one is the RSN, Southwest Washington Behavior Health. And that takes a lot of time, and that's going to take a lot of time.
It's really, really important.
Mm-hmm. Yes, we've made some. Most of the decisions on that have been, some of them are structural changes, and on each of those structural changes that are continuing to unfold, I'm looking to, I think each of the commissioners that sit on that board from the three counties are looking to the prosecuting attorneys for each of those offices, and when they finally get unanimous, they all agree, then we're free to say, yes, we agree. Just to know how I view my role on that board is when it comes to the operations, the setting the policy that governs the how it works, the day-to-day kind of live within the structure, that's our job. But anything that will change the structure or somehow morph its future, I never make those decisions. I always work with our prosecuting attorneys, and if there's something that is going to be major that represents us as a county, then I bring that back here to our board, and then we'll make that decision together. And we did that when it comes to the selection of the early adopter option.
Okay.
I think that predated you, didn't it?
Well, I know that all over the country, people are working on being the early adopter. And I know generally the framework that fits into. I'm not quite sure why it's so important right here, right now, but I will be having a meeting soon to discuss that.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Well, one of the advantages of the state somehow provides a financial benefit.
Yes.
To us if we go that road.
And everyone has to transition in some fashion, and you either transition to BHO and then to the fully integrated, or you can skip the BHO and go straight to fully integrated.
Mm-hmm.
And Vanessa believes that it's wasteful and silly to transition twice.
Yes.
Lead the pack and do it once.
Lead the pack, and that's an accomplishment, because sometimes step by step is easier, but to avoid that long interim wasteful period is smart.
Yes, there's two other points to make on that. One is if we didn't go early adopter, then we are letting the state and other entities lead us, and we kind of inherit what they think is best for our community. And if we end up being early adopters, we get to lead and determine where the parade is going to go. And that is the best position that we can have when it comes to championing our community, that we are going to be more successful than being on the tail end of things.
Sure, and I think there is punitive, some kind of punitive circumstance to, if, I mean, there is, for people that aren't early adopters or don't adopt the whole package, and it might just be that disadvantage, but there is a negative connotation to not being
sure.
An early adopter.
And if you create the model, then everyone else has to live with your model. Plus, I think we got money and resources that the other late adopters might not get,
exactly,
or very likely
right.
might not get.
Yes, I also want to take this opportunity to plug for Vanessa Gaston, the director of community services. She's doing a fabulous job leading the Health Alliance, all of the stakeholders in the whole area, and she's been a huge help to us. Our executive director, Connie Momching, has given her notice, and she will be leaving on the 20th of this month. So we'll have a vacancy there, and so we're looking for some new leadership.
When did we get that notice?
Just about, I guess the 20th of January. It was a 30-day notice, I think, she gave us. So there are some things in the works. You're checking in on potential leadership alternatives there, right, Mark? Okay. The other news update on the RSN, Southwest Washington Behavioral Health, is since Clark, Collitz, Skamania counties are changing, Collitz is leaving, and then afterwards, Klickitat, the next county to the east, will be our new partner. During that transition, what happens first is that of the three counties, Collitz goes away, which means that the RSN would be governed by two board members instead of three, and it would be simply Chris Sprong from Skamania and me from Clark County for several months.
That happens June 30th?
I think so. Okay. And until Klickitat joins in, and then we'll have three again.
And then the early adopter takes effect on the 1st of April, 2016?
That's probably a good guess. I don't
and that's
know the
when the RSN goes away, same time,
okay,
end of March.
All right. So that's just a quick update on that. Chris Sprong is doing the bulk of the work on that.
So why is Cowlitz out?
They did not want to go early adopter. They went north and west instead.
So they were Grays Harbor?
Mm-hmm. They went, which is tiny in comparison.
And so it's Clark, Skamania.
Klickitat.
And Klickitat.
Mm-hmm. And we haven't really been in touch with Klickitat yet. We will be later this year.
Do we have to have Tri-County?
Or
is it just financially advantageous to have a coalition of three?
Each county had the freedom to choose who they're going to partner with, and they chose us, and we accepted them, as far as I understand it.
I think the state had an ideal number of regions, and so that existing counties had to be shoehorned into the
pick your adjacent neighbor, which one you want to go with. And it had to do with being of the same mind when it comes to early adopter or not. That really sorted it out.
So who did Wakayakum go with? Do we know?
No.
I don't.
Okay,
that's all I have. Anything else? Mark?
A reminder, tomorrow at 4 o'clock, you and I together visit with the Vancouver Business Journal. They've got their strategic advisory group. So we'll hike over to the old City Hall, the new Berger ABAM building.
Oh, that's
and,
great.
Do a joint talk.
Sure enough, 4 p.m.
And so what's that about?
They just want to know what impact we believe the charter might have on the business community.
Mm-hmm. And remember that leadership Clark County had invited our good manager here, and we didn't even know about it.
Yes.
And so we said, let us know.
And
if
you got invited, and I didn't know about it.
Yep.
Well, in the round table, in the round robin.
Just kidding.
Okay.
There's going to be a chair there for you next year.
Okay. So because Mark was invited to this event, he was kind enough to invite us. I guess I got picked. And so we're going to partner up together. And Yay, Clark County.
So.
Thank God.
That's, and I appreciate that if you got that invitation, that you could see if it can be expanded to include a commissioner, because it's a team effort. And we're trying to reflect that in every way that's moving forward with the charter. It's a team effort. It's not anybody against anybody.
Exactly.
It's all of us in the same boat rowing the same direction. So I really respect that and appreciate it.
And the messaging is really simple. This does not change the priorities of our policies. It says we are pro-business, we are pro-citizen, we serve as elected representatives, and we will work as a team to make Clark County the best, most business-friendly, best quality of life county in the United States.
And we're going to grow jobs.
Yeah, that's right.
And we have our agenda. Good.
So the charter does not provide does not insert an obstacle in that at all. Good fruit from government comes in primarily by selecting, if it's going to be pro-citizen, it's going to be by electing pro-citizen representatives, regardless of the form.
So that raises kind of an underlying question. I have not heard from the business community at all any concerns about how the charter would affect their businesses. The businesses I've talked to see it as a benign change. What businesses are interested is what will be the working relationship between the county manager and the councilors. And people are very interested in that. And that's our opportunity to reassure in that direction, too.
Well, I've rehearsed them. Oh, I'm sorry.
No, go ahead.
I've rehearsed in my mind what I plan to say if I have the floor. And part of my message will be exactly that, that when we had commissioners and an administrator, that we were, in my opinion,
yes,
finally knit team.
Yes.
The charter changed our form of government to counselor manager, and we're still a tightly knit team.
Exactly.
Nothing changes that.
Yeah.
And so the business-friendly attitude we had before remains. And, in fact, we're always looking for ways to become even more friendly.
Mm-hmm. So thank you for drawing us in.
Yes, in one word, I would say transparent. Any change of the inner workings of the county ought to be and is actually transparent to the community. And the question, will the charter handicap our county government from continuing to be business-friendly and citizen-friendly? The answer is no, it's not. We are as business-friendly as the elected representatives and our county manager, and you are very business-friendly and very citizen-friendly, sir.
And I'm trying to use the county manager meetings to bring to light good practices that the county undertakes to serve the citizens, and the three topics we had today, I think, exemplified that goal. Smart things we're doing that they wouldn't have known about otherwise.
Yes, and you're doing, not only are you trying to do that, but you are succeeding in doing that. That was really good. I especially appreciate the partnership and the way that our sheriff's office is working with Sumania's sheriff law enforcement. Fabulous outcome. That's a post coming up.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, I've got money down on which one.
If you got any documents, pictures, or anything to do, email me. I might be able to draw from that.
The only thing I have is the chart, the money chart.
Oh yeah. Okay.
I'll ask Rick if he's got it.
Yeah, see if he's got
other
else.
Good
maybe
stuff you can put out.
Maybe a
there.
Picture of physical facilities or something in Skamania or something.
Okay.
And what I'd like to say about that meeting this morning, specifically regarding the partnership with the sheriffs, that is so good to have this broader regional community communication the more of that we can open up,
mm-hmm.
the more of that we can participate in, that's all very beneficial for all of us. So
mm-hmm.
we have Clark County, we have the jurisdictions in Clark County opening up communication with them in every mode, in every way.
Mm-hmm.
And then even
beyond
this broader
mm-hmm.
yeah, to the health issues
mm-hmm.
for Clark, Skamania, and Klickitat,
mm-hmm.
for Workforce Development Council. We have a similar commission that is myself, Clark County, Cowlitz County, and Wakayakum County for Workforce Development
mm-hmm.
Council. And that by having that sort of unified, formalized group, it also enables us to look for additional grant money, and we
exactly
share the watershed, so so to speak.
You know, state governments like it when counties cooperate and
sure.
to get things done,
yeah.
and you're
but,
right.
But those communications, they may start out about Workforce Development Council, but that really is a connection that
mm-hmm.
is serves so many other lines of communication.
Mm-hmm.
Excellent.
Speaking of the Workforce Development Council, I had a very good meeting yesterday with Chancellor Mel Netzhammer from WSU, and he is thrilled at the opportunities there to be able to somehow increase the talent pool and the skill pool for Clark County future workforce.
Well, they're key in getting our median wage increased and
they
the median education level increased.
Mm-hmm. I also got to, he's right next door to Jeff Smith from Smith Root. I mean,
uh-huh.
they almost share the same driveway, just 100 feet away. And I also got to tour Jeff Smith Root's new facility that's under construction up on 50th Avenue. And adjacent to that is 50 acres that they're both interested in developing into a research
yes.
park for the school,
yep.
and that would be fabulous. I just
that's
love
the
to see them all networking together.
Yep.
Smith Root is just kind of the ideal employer. Not only are they have I toured their facility just 2 weeks ago, and their family down there. They all are working together in a way that's just so healthy, and their community, the new site. On 50th Avenue, they're moving right next door to a little elementary school. It's a private elementary school, charter school, I guess. Right? Well, Gardner School. And they've already set things up. They're creating a little park for them. The kids didn't have a place to evacuate out, and you got to have plans for that. And they were evacuating out to the road, and instead they put a gate in there for them to be able to come use our facility. They're mentoring them. They're giving them opportunity. They're partnering with them. They're fundraising for them. I thought, man, what a great neighbor. That's just a wonderful example of how businesses ought to be good for the community.
And I might add that Marty Snell is providing concierge service to Mr. Smith. So.
And that is great. He had a good report. He said, yep. Moving things along very well. I've got a few specifics of he had some other ideas. He can add to even a few increments.
Be happy to hear them.
Yeah, great. So
okay.
Yeah,
I'd like to compliment you, Councillor Stewart, for wearing your county credentials. I don't think that we've
ever. It's only so I don't get locked out.
Okay. I've never seen one of these around the neck of one of our elected officials.
Well,
so.
It was. I'll tell you why later.
Uh-huh.
Well. Yeah, that 50 acres and then even some other land that is up in that vicinity.
They could use 100.
Well, and there is the infrastructure improvements are part of why that has not been developed yet.
Right, right.
And that's been on the map, so to speak, the need for that, the possibility the richness that that could provide
yes.
in many ways. But
now we've talked about that
incremental
right.
getting to that mm-hmm. aspect of that.
Right. Now, improving 50th, I don't think it's in our six-year tip. I don't know if it's in our 20-year plan.
It should be in our 20-year.
But certainly
but I think
the
water
fact,
and sewer is an issue there, too.
Exactly. Then we've got... The EDAT team has Clark Regional Wastewater
yes.
and Clark Public Utilities representation so that we can all
yes.
integrate our efforts.
Excellent.
So the fact that they're moving there is going to stimulate some movement and probably move it up in the priority dramatically.
Absolutely.
Yes, very good. You want to do your signature on this? Anything else, Mr. Manager?
I'm good.
Anything else? Axel?
Good.
Peter? Ellie? Okay. Motion to adjourn.
So moved.
All in favor?
Aye.
All right, we're adjourned.
I jumped the gun.
Get your gavel. I saw that.
Like, close my iPad.
Am I hammering?